that star till you come to a road that runs from southwest to northeast. Take that road for a mile to the northeast, till you reach a mile marker and the charter stone behind it. A path behind the stone leads to the long cliffs immediately north. Take the path. It ends in a door in the cliffs. The door will answer to Mosrael. Beyond the door is a tunnel sloping sharply upwards. Beyond the tunnel lies Abhorsen's bridge. The house is over the bridge. Go with love, and do not tarry. Do not stop, no matter what happens. Thank you, Sabriel began, carefully filing the words away with the accompanying thoughts. Could you also... She stopped, as the mother sending in front of her suddenly raised both arms as if shocked and shouted, Go! At the same time, Sabriel felt the diamond of protection around her physical body twinge in warning, and she became aware that the north mark had failed. Instantly, she turned on her left heel and began racing back to the border with life, drawing her sword. The current almost seemed to strengthen against her, twining around her legs, but then fell away before her urgency. Sabriel reached the border, and with a furious thrust of will, her spirit emerged back into life. For a second she was disoriented, suddenly freezing again and thick-witted. A grinning, corpse-like creature was just stepping through the failed north mark, its arms reaching to embrace her, carrion breath misting out of her mouth unnaturally wide. Thralk had been pleased to find the charter mage's spirit wandering, and a broken diamond of protection. The sword had worried him a little, but it was frosted over, and his shriveled eyes couldn't see the charter marks that danced beneath the rime. Similarly, the bell in Sabriel's left hand looked like a lump of ice or snow, as if she'd caught a snowball. All in all, Thralk felt very fortunate, particularly as the life that blazed within this still victim was particularly young and strong. Thralk sidled closer still, and his double-jointed arms reached to embrace Sabriel's neck. Just as his slimy, corrupted fingers stretched forward, Sabriel opened her eyes and executed the stop thrust that had earned her second place in fighting arts, and later lost her the first. Her arm and sword straightened like one limb to their full extent, and the sword point ripped through Thralk's neck and into 8 inches of air beyond. Thralk screamed, his reaching fingers gripping the sword to push himself free, only to scream again as charter marks flared on the blade. White-hot sparks plumed between his knuckles, and Thralk suddenly knew what he'd encountered.
"Abhorsen!" he croaked, falling backwards as Sabriel twisted the blade free with one explosive jerk. Already the sword was affecting the dead flesh Thralk inhabited, charter magic burning through reanimated nerves, freezing the all-too-fluid joints. Fire rose in Thralk's throat, but he spoke to distract this terrible opponent, while his spirit tried to shuck the body, like a snake its skin, and retreat into the night.
"Abhorsen, I will serve you, praise you, be your hand. I know things alive and dead. I will help lure others to you."
The clear, deep sound of Saraneth cut through the whining, broken voice like a foghorn booming above the shriek of seagulls. The chime vibrated on and on, echoing into the night, and Thralk felt it bind him even as his spirit leaked out of the body and made for flight. The bell bound him to paralyzed flesh, bound him to the will of the bell-ringer. Fury seethed in him, anger and fear fueling his struggle, but the sound was everywhere, all around him, all through him. He would never be free of it. Sabriel watched the misshapen shadow writhing, half out of the corpse, half in it, the body bleeding a pool of darkness. It was still trying to use the corpse's mouth, but without success. She considered going with it into death, where it would have a shape, and she could make it answer with Dairim. But the broken Charterstone loomed nearby, and she felt it as an ever-present fear, like a cold jewel upon her breast. In her mind, she heard her mother Sending's words, "Do not tarry. Do not stop, no matter what happens." Sabriel thrust her sword point-first into the snow, put Saraneth away, and drew Kibeth from the bandolier, using both hands. Thralk sensed it, and his fury gave way to pure, unadulterated fear. After all the centuries of struggle, he knew true death had come for him at last. Sabriel took up a careful stance, with the bell held in a curious two-handed grip. Kibeth seemed almost to twitch in her hands, but she controlled it, swinging it backwards, forwards, and then in a sort of odd figure eight. The sounds, all from the one bell, were very different to each other, but they made a little marching tune, a dancing song, a parade. Thralk heard them and felt forces grip him. Strange, inexorable powers that made him find the border, made him return to death. Vainly, almost pathetically, he struggled against them, knowing he couldn't break free. He knew that he would walk through every gate to fall at last through the ninth. He gave up the struggle and used the last of his strength to form a semblance of a mouth in the middle of his shadow stuff, a mouth with a writhing tongue of darkness.
"Curse you," he gurgled. "I will tell the servants of Kerrigor, as you will be revenged."
His grotesque, gulping voice was chopped off in mid-sentence as Thralk lost free will. Saraneth had bound him, but Kibeth gripped him, and Kibeth walked him so Thralk would be no more. The twisting shadow simply disappeared, and there was only snow under a long-dead corpse. Even though the revenant was gone, his last words troubled Sabriel. The name Kerrigor, while not exactly familiar, touched some basic fear in her, some memory. Perhaps Abhorsen had spoken this name, which undoubtedly belonged to one of the greater dead. The name scared her in the same way the broken stone did, as if they were tangible symbols of a world gone wrong, a world where her father was lost, where she herself was terribly threatened. Sabriel coughed, feeling the cold in her lungs, and very carefully replaced Kibeth in the bandolier. Her sword seemed to have burned itself clean, but she ran a cloth over the blade before returning it to the scabbard. She felt very tired as she swung her pack back on, but there was no doubt in her mind that she must move on immediately. Her mother spirit's words kept echoing in her mind, and her own senses told her something was happening in death. Something powerful was moving towards life, moving towards emergence at the broken stone. There had been too much death, and too much charter magic on this hill, and the night was yet to reach its blackest. The wind was swinging around, the clouds regaining their superiority over sky. Soon the stars would disappear, and the young moon would be wrapped in white. Quickly, Sabriel scanned the heavens, looking for the three bright stars that marked the buckle of the North Giant's belt. She found them, but then had to check the star map in her almanac, a handmade match stinking as it cast a yellow flicker on the pages, for she didn't dare use any more charter magic till she was away from the broken stone. The almanac showed that she had remembered correctly. The buckle was due north in the Old Kingdom. Its other name was Mariner's Cheat. In Anselstier, the buckle was easily 10 degrees west of north. North located, Sabriel started to make her way to that side of the crest, looking for the spur that slanted down to the valley lost in darkness below. The clouds were thickening, and she wanted to reach level ground before the moonlight disappeared. At least the spur, when found, looked like easier going than the broken steps to the south, though its gentle slope proclaimed a long descent to the valley. In fact, it took several hours before Sabriel reached the valley floor, stumbling and shivering, a very pale charter flame dancing a little ways in front of her. Too insubstantial to really ease her path, it had helped her avoid major disaster, and she hoped it was pallid enough to be taken for marsh gas or chance reflection. In any case, it had proved essential when clouds closed the last remaining gap in the sky. So much for no cloud, Sabriel thought, as she looked towards what she guessed was still north, searching for the red star, Euallus. Her teeth were chattering and would not be stilled, and a shiver that had started with her ice-cold feet was repeating itself through every limb. If she didn't keep moving, she'd simply freeze where she stood, particularly as the wind was rising once more. Sabriel laughed quietly, almost hysterically, and turned her face to feel the breeze. It was an easterly, gaining strength with the minute. Colder, yes, but it also cleared the cloud, sweeping it to the west, and there, in the first cleared broomstroke of the wind, was Euallus, gleaming red. Sabriel smiled, stared at it, took stock of the little she could see around her, and started off again, following the star, a whispering voice constant in the back of her mind, "Do not tarry, do not stop, no matter what happens." The smile lasted as Sabriel found the road, and, with a good cover of snow in each gutter, she skied, making good time. By the time Sabriel found the mile marker and the charter stone behind it, no trace of the smile could be seen on her pale face. It was snowing again, snowing sideways as the wind grew more frenzied, taking the snowflakes and whipping them into her eyes, now the only exposed portion of her entire body. Her boots were soaked, too, despite the mutton fat she'd rubbed into them. Her feet, face, and hands were freezing, and she was exhausted. She'd dutifully eaten a little every hour, but now simply couldn't open her frozen jaws. For a short time, at the intact charter stone that rose proudly behind the smaller mile marker, Sabriel had made herself warm, invoking a charter spell for heat. But she'd grown too tired to maintain it without the assistance of the stone, and the spell dissipated almost as soon as she walked on. Only the Mother Spirit's warning kept her going. That, and the sensation that she was being followed. It was only a feeling, and in her tired, chilled state, Sabriel wondered if it was just imagination. But she wasn't in any state to face up to anything that might not be imagined, so she forced herself to go on. Do not tarry. Do not stop, no matter what happens. The path from the charter stone was better made than the one that climbed Cloven Crest, but steeper. The pathmakers here had to cut through a dense greyish rock, which did not erode like granite, and they had built hundreds of wide, low steps, carved with intricate patterns. Whether these meant something, Sabriel didn't know. They weren't charter marks, or symbols of any language that she knew, and she was too tired to speculate. She concentrated on one step at a time, using her hands to push down on her aching thighs, coughing and gasping, head down to avoid the flying snow. The path grew steeper still, and Sabriel could see the cliff face ahead, a huge, black, vertical mass, a much darker backdrop to the swirling snow than the clouded sky, palely backlit by the moon. But she didn't seem to get any closer as the path switchbacked to and fro, rising further and further up from the valley below. Then, suddenly, Sabriel was there. The path turned again, and her little will-o'-the-wisp light reflected back from a wall that stretched for miles to either side and for hundreds of yards upwards. Clearly, these were the long cliffs, and the path had ended. Almost sobbing with relief, Sabriel pushed herself forward to the very base of the cliff, and the little light rose above her head, to disclose grey, lichen-veined rock. But even with that light, there was no sign of a door. Nothing but jagged, impervious rock, going up and out of her tiny circle of illumination. There was no path, and nowhere else to go. Wearily, Sabriel knelt in a patch of snow and rubbed her hands together vigorously, trying to restore circulation, before drawing Mosrael from the bandolier. Mosrael, the waker. Sabriel stilled it carefully and concentrated her senses, feeling for anything dead that might be near and should not be woken. There was nothing close. But once again, Sabriel felt something behind her, something following her far down on the path, something dead, something reeking of power. She tried to judge how distant the thing was before forcing it from her thoughts. Whatever it might be, it was too far away to hear even Mosrael's raucous voice. Sabriel stood up and rang the bell. It made a sound like tens of parrots screeching, a noise that burst into the air and wove itself into the wind, echoing from the cliffs, multiplying into the scream of a thousand birds. Sabriel stilled the bell at once and put it away, but the echoes raced across the valley, and she knew the thing behind her had heard. She felt it fix its attention on where she was, and she felt it quicken its pace, like watching the muscles on a racehorse going from the walk to a gallop. It was coming up the steps at least four or five at a time. She felt the rush of it in her head, and the fear rising in her at equal pace, but she still went to the path and looked down, drawing her sword as she did so. There, between gusts of snow, she saw a figure leaping from step to step, impossible leaps that ate up the distance between them with horrible appetite. It was man-like, more than man high, and flames ran like burning oil on water where it trod. Sabriel cried out as she saw it, and felt the dead spirit within. The Book of the Dead opened to fearful pages in her memory, and descriptions of evil poured into her head. It was a mordicant that hunted her, a thing that could pass at will through life and death. Its body of bog clay and human blood molded and infused with free magic by a necromancer and a dead spirit placed inside as its guiding force. Sabriel had banished a mordicant once, but that had been 40 miles from the wall in Anselstier, and it had been weak, already fading. This one was strong, fiery, new-born. It would kill her, she suddenly knew, and subjugate her spirit. All her plans and dreams, her hopes and courage, fell out of her, to be replaced by pure, unthinking panic. She turned to one side, then the other, like a rabbit running from a dog. But the only way down was the path, and the mordicant was only 100 yards below, closing with every blink, with every falling snowflake. Flames were spewing from its mouth, and it thrust its pointed head back and howled as it ran, a howl like the last shout of someone falling to their death, underlaid with the squeal of fingernails on glass. Sabriel, a scream somehow stuck and choking in her throat, turned to the cliff, hammering on it with the pommel of her sword. "Open! Open!" she screamed, as charter marks raced through her brain, but not the right ones for forcing a door, a spell she'd learned in the second form. She knew it like she knew her times tables, but the charter marks just wouldn't come. And why was 12 times 12 sticking in her head when she wanted charter marks? The echoes from Mosrael faded, and in that silence, the pommel struck on something that thudded hollowly, rather than throwing sparks and jarring her hand. Something wooden. Something that hadn't been there before. A door, tall and strangely narrow, its dark oak lined with silver charter marks dancing through the grain. An iron ring, exactly at hand height, touched Sabriel's hip. Sabriel dropped her sword with a gasp, grabbed the ring and pulled. Nothing happened. Sabriel tugged again, half turning to look over her shoulder, almost cringing at what she would see. The mordicant turned the last corner, and its eyes met hers. Sabriel shut them, unable to bear the hatred and bloodlust glowing in its gaze like a poker left too long in the forge. It howled again and almost flowed up the remaining steps, flames dripping from its mouth, claws, and feet. Sabriel, eyes still closed, pushed on the ring. The door flew open, and she fell in, crashing to the ground in a flurry of snow, eyes snapping open. Desperately, she twisted herself around on the ground, ignoring the pain in her knees and hands. Reaching back outside, she snagged the hilt of her sword and snatched it in. As the blade cleared the doorway, the mordicant reached it, and twisting itself sideways to pass the narrow portal, thrust an arm inside. Flames boiled from its grey-green flesh like beads of sweat, and small plumes of black smoke spiraled from the flames, bringing with them a stench like burning hair. Sabriel, sprawled defenseless on the floor, could only stare in terror as the thing's four-taloned hand slowly opened and reached out for her. Chapter 7. But the hand didn't close. The talons failed to rend defenseless flesh. Instead, Sabriel felt a sudden surge of charter magic, and charter marks flared around the door, blazing so brightly that they left red after-images at the back of her eyes, black dots dancing across her vision. Blinking, she saw a man step out from the stones of the wall, a tall and obviously strong man, with a longsword the twin of Sabriel's own. This sword came whistling down on the mordicant's arm, biting out a chunk of burning, marsh-rotten flesh. Rebounding, the sword flicked back again and hewed another slice, like an axeman sending chips flying from a tree. The mordicant howled, more in anger than in pain, but it withdrew the arm, and the stranger threw himself against the door, slamming it shut with the full weight of his mail-clad body. Curiously for mail, it made no sound, no jangling from the flow of hundreds of steel links. A strange body under it, too, Sabriel saw, as the black dots and the red wash faded, revealing that her rescuer wasn't human at all. He had seemed solid enough, but every square inch of him was defined by tiny, constantly moving charter marks, and Sabriel could see nothing between them but empty air. It was a charter ghost, ascending. Outside, the mordicant howled again, like a steam train venting pressure. Then the whole corridor shook and hinges screeched in protest as the thing threw itself against the door. Wood splintered, and clouds of thick grey dust fell from the ceiling, mocking the falling snow outside. The sending turned to face Sabriel and offered its hand to help her up. Sabriel took it, looking up at it as her tired, frozen legs struggled to make a tenth-round comeback. Close to, the illusion of flesh was imperfect, fluid, and unsettling. Its face wouldn't stay fixed, migrating between scores of possibilities. Some were women, some were men, but all bore tough, competent visages. Its body and clothing changed slightly, too, with every face, but two details always remained the same. A black surcoat with the blazon of a silver key, and a long sword redolent with charter magic. "Thank you," Sabriel said nervously, flinching as the mordicant pounded the door again. Will it get through?" The sending nodded grimly and let go her hand to point up the long corridor, but it did not speak. Sabriel turned her head to follow its pointing hand and saw a dark passage that rose up into darkness. Charter marks illuminated where they stood, but faded only a little way on. Despite this, the darkness seemed friendly, and she could almost taste the charter spells that rode on the corridor's dusty air. "I must go on?" asked Sabriel, as it pointed again, more urgently. The sending nodded and flapped its hand backwards and forwards, indicating haste. Behind him, another crashing blow caused another great billow of dust, and the door sounded as if it was weakening. Once again, the vile, burnt smell of the mordicant wafted through the air. The doorkeeper wrinkled its nose and gave Sabriel a bit of a push in the right direction, like a parent urging a reluctant child to press on. But Sabriel needed no urging. Her fear was still burning in her. Momentarily extinguished by the rescue, the smell of the mordicant was all it needed to blaze again. She set her face upwards and started to walk quickly into the passage. She looked back after a few yards to see the doorkeeper waiting near the door, its sword at the guard position. Beyond it, the door was bulging in, iron-bound planks bursting, breaking around a hole as big as a dinner plate. The mordicant reached in and broke off more planks as easily as it might snap toothpicks. It was obviously furious that its prey was getting away, for it burned all over now. Yellow-red flames vomited from its mouth in a vile torrent, and black smoke rose like a second shadow around it, eddying in crazy circles as it howled. Sabriel looked away, setting off at a fast walk, but the walk grew faster and faster, became a jog, and then a run. Her feet pounded on the stone, but it wasn't until she was almost sprinting that she realized why she could. Her pack and skis were still back at the lower door. For a moment she was struck with a nervous inclination to go back, but it passed before it even became conscious thought. Even so, her hands checked scabbard and bandolier, and gained reassurance from the cool metal of sword hilt and the hand-smoothed wood of the bell handles. It was light, too, she realized as she ran. Charter marks ran in the stone, keeping pace with her. Charter marks for light and for fleetness and for many other things she didn't know. Strange marks, and many of them. So many that Sabriel wondered how she could have ever thought that a first in magic from an Ancelstieran school would make her a great mage in the Old Kingdom. Fear and realization of ignorance were strong medicines against stupid pride. Another howl came racing up the passage and echoed onwards, accompanied by many crashes and thuds or clangs of steel striking supernatural flesh or ricocheting off stone. Sabriel didn't need to look back to know the mordicant had broken through the door and was now fighting the doorkeeper or pushing past him. Sabriel knew little of such sendings, but a common failing with the sentinel variety was an inability to leave their post. Once the creature got a few feet past the doorkeeper, the sending would be useless, and one great charge would soon get the mordicant past. That thought gave her another burst of speed, but Sabriel knew that it was the last. Her body, pushed by fear and weakened by cold and exertion, was on the edge of failure. Her legs felt stiff, muscles ready to cramp, and her lungs seemed to bubble with fluid rather than air. Ahead, the corridor seemed to go on and on, sloping ever upwards, but the light only shone where Sabriel ran, so perhaps the exit might not be too far ahead, perhaps just past the next little patch of darkness. Even as this thought passed through her mind, Sabriel saw a glow that sharpened into the bright tracing of a doorway. She half gasped, half cried out, both slight human noises drowned out by the unholy, inhuman screech of the mordicant. It was past the doorkeeper. At the same time, Sabriel became aware of a new sound ahead, a sound she had initially thought was the throb of blood in her ears, the pounding of a racing heart. But it was outside, beyond the upper door, a deep, roaring noise, so low it was almost a vibration, a shudder that she felt through the floor rather than heard. Heavy trucks passing on a road above, Sabriel thought, before remembering where she was. In that same instant she recognized the sound. Somewhere ahead, out of these encircling cliffs, a great waterfall was crashing down. And a waterfall that made so great a sound must be fed by an equally great river. Running water! The prospect of it fueled Sabriel with sudden hope, and with that hope came the strength she thought beyond her. In a wild spurt of speed, she almost hit the door, hands slapping against the wood, slowing for the instant she needed to find the handle or ring. but another hand was already on the ring when she touched it, though none had been there a second before. Again, charter marks defined this hand, and Sabriel could see the grain of the wood and the bluing of the steel through the palm of another sending. This one was smaller, of indeterminate sex, for it was wearing a habit like a monk's, with the hood drawn across its head. The habit was black, and bore the emblem of the silver key front and back. It bowed and turned the ring. The door swung open to reveal bright starlight shining down between clouds fleeing the newly risen wind. The noise of the waterfall roared through the open doorway, accompanied by flecks of flying spray. Without thinking, Sabriel stepped out. The cowled doorkeeper came with her and shut the door behind it, before dragging a delicate silver portcullis down across the door and locking it with an iron padlock. Both defences apparently came out of thin air. Sabriel looked at them and felt power in them, for both were also charter sendings. But door, portcullis, and lock would only slow the mordicant, not stop it. The only possible escape lay across the swiftest of running water, or the untimely glare of a noonday sun. The first lay at her feet, and the second was still many hours away. Sabriel stood on a narrow ledge that projected out from the bank of a river at least 400 yards wide. A little to her right, a scant few paces away, this mighty river hurled itself over the cliff to make a truly glorious waterfall. Sabriel leaned forward a little to look at the waters crashing below, creating huge white wings of spray that could easily swallow her entire school, new wing and all, like a rubber duck swamped in an unruly bath. It was a very long fall, and the height, coupled with the sheer power of the water, made her quickly look back to the river. Straight ahead, halfway across, Sabriel could just make out an island perched on the very lip of the waterfall, dividing the river into two streams. It wasn't a very big island, about the size of a football field, but it rose like a ship of jagged rock from the turbulent waters. Encircling the island were limestone white walls the height of 6 men. Behind those walls was a house. It was too dark to see clearly, but there was a tower, a thrusting pencil silhouette, with red tiles that were just beginning to catch the dawning sun. Below the tower, a dark bulk hinted at the existence of a hall, a kitchen, bedrooms, armory, buttery, and cellar. The study, Sabriel suddenly remembered, occupied the second to top floor of the tower. The top floor was an observatory, both of stars and the surrounding territory. It was Ab Horsen's house. Home, although Sabriel had only visited it twice, or maybe 3 times, all when she was too young to remember much. That period of her life was hazy, and mostly filled with recollections of the travellers, the interiors of their wagons, and many different campsites that all blurred together. She didn't even remember the waterfall, though the sound of it did stir some recognition. Something had lodged in the mind of a 4-year-old girl. Unfortunately, she didn't remember how to get to the house. Only the words her mother sending had given her. Ab Horsen's bridge. She hadn't realized she'd spoken these words aloud, till the little gate warden tugged at her sleeve and pointed down. Sabriel looked and saw steps carved into the bank, steps leading right down to the river. This time, Sabriel didn't hesitate. She nodded to the charter sending and whispered, "Thank you," before taking the steps. The mordicant's presence was pressing at her again, like a stranger's rank breath behind her ear. She knew it had reached the upper gate, though the sound of its battering and destruction was drowned in the greater roar of the waters. The steps led to the river, but did not end there. Though invisible from the ledge, there were stepping stones leading out to the island. Sabriel eyed them nervously and looked at the water. It was clearly very deep, and rushing past at an alarming speed. The stepping stones were barely above its boisterous wavelets, and, even though they were wide and cross-hatched for grip, They were also wet with spray and the slushy remnants of snow and ice. Sabriel watched a small piece of ice from upstream hurtle by, and pictured its slingshot ride over the falls to be smashed apart so far below. She imagined herself in its place, and then thought of the mordicant behind her, of the dead spirit that was at its heart, of the death it would bring, and the imprisonment she would suffer beyond death. She jumped. Her boots skidded a little, and her arms flailed for balance, but she ended up steady, bent over in a half-crouch. Hardly waiting to rebalance, she jumped to the next stone, and then the one after that, and again, in a mad leapfrog through the spray and thunder of the river. When she was halfway out, with 100 yards of pure, ferocious water behind her, she stopped and looked back. The mordicant was on the ledge, the silvery portcullis broken and mangled in its grip. There was no sign of the gate warden, but that was not surprising. Defeated, it would merely fade until the charter spell renewed itself, hours, days, or even years later. The dead thing was curiously still, but it was clearly watching Sabriel. Even so powerful a creature couldn't cross this river, and it made no attempt to do so. In fact, the longer Sabriel stared at it, the more it seemed to her that the mordicant was content to wait. It was a sentry, guarding what might be the only exit from the island. Or perhaps it was waiting for something to happen, or for someone to arrive. Sabriel suppressed a shudder and jumped on. There was more light now, heralding the advent of the sun, and she could see a sort of wooden landing stage leading up to a gate in the white wall. Treetops were also visible behind the walls, winter trees, their branches bare of green raiment. Birds flew between trees and tower, little birds launching themselves for their morning forage. It was a vision of normalcy, of a haven. But Sabriel could not forget the tall, flame-etched silhouette of the mordicant brooding on the ledge. Wearily she made the jump to the last stone and collapsed on the steps of the landing stage. Even her eyelids could barely move, and her field of vision had narrowed to a little slit directly to her front. The grain of the planks of the landing stage loomed close as she crawled up to the gate and half-heartedly fell against it. The gate swung open, pitching her onto a paved courtyard, the beginning of a red brick path, the bricks ancient, their redness the color of dusty apples. The path wound up to the front door of the house, a cheerful sky-blue door, bright against whitewashed stone. A bronze door knocker, in the shape of a lion's head, holding a ring in its mouth, gleamed in counterpoint to the white cat that lay coiled on the rush mat before the door. Sabriel lay on the bricks and smiled up at the cat, blinking back tears. The cat twitched and turned its head ever so slightly to look at her, revealing bright green eyes.
"Hello, puss," croaked Sabriel, coughing as she staggered once more to her feet and walked forward, groaning and creaking with every step.
She reached down to pat the cat and froze, for, as the cat thrust its head up, she saw the collar around its neck and the tiny bell that hung there. The collar was only red leather, but the charter spell on it was the strongest, most enduring binding that Sabriel had ever seen or felt, and the bell was a miniature Saraneth. The cat was no cat, but a free magic creature of ancient power.
"Abhorsen,"
mewed the cat, its little pink tongue darting.
"About time you got here."
Sabriel stared at it for a moment, gave a little sort of moan, and fell forward in a faint of exhaustion and dismay. Chapter 8. Sabriel awoke.
"You got here."
Sabriel stared at it for a moment, gave a little sort of moan, and fell forward in a faint of exhaustion and dismay. Chapter 8 Sabriel awoke to soft candlelight, the warmth of a feather bed and silken sheets, delightfully smooth under heavy blankets. A fire burned briskly in a red brick fireplace, and wood-panelled walls gleamed with the dark mystery of well-polished mahogany. A blue-papered ceiling with silver stars dusted across it faced her newly opened eyes. Two windows confronted each other across the room, but they were shuttered, so Sabriel had no idea what time it was, no more than she had any remembrance of how she'd got there. It was definitely Ab Horson's house, but her last memory was of fainting on the doorstep. Gingerly, for even her neck ached from her day and night of travel, fear, and flight, Sabriel lifted her head to look around and once again met the green eyes of the cat that wasn't a cat. The creature was lying near her feet at the end of the bed.
What are you?
Sabriel asked nervously, suddenly all too aware that she was naked under the soft sheets. A sensuous delight, but a defenseless one. Her eyes flickered to her sword belt and bell bandolier, carefully draped on a clothes horse near the door.
I have a variety of names, replied the cat.
It had a strange voice, half mew, half purr, with hissing on the vowels.
You may call me Mogget. As to what I am, I was once many things, but now I am only several. Primarily, I am a servant of Ab Horson, unless you would be kind enough to remove my collar.
Sabriel gave an uneasy smile and shook her head firmly. Whatever Mogget was, that collar was the only thing that kept it as a servant of Ab Horson, or anybody else. The charter marks on the collar were quite explicit about that. As far as Sabriel could tell, the binding spell was over 1,000 years old. It was quite possible that Mogget was some free magic spirit as old as the wall, or even older. She wondered why her father hadn't mentioned it, and with a pang wished that she had awoken to find her father here in his house, both their troubles over.
I thought not, said Mogget, combining a careless shrug with a limbering stretch. It, or he, for Sabriel felt the cat was definitely masculine, jumped to the parquet floor and sauntered over to the fire.
Sabriel watched, her trained eye noting that Mogget's shadow was not always that of a cat. A knock at the door interrupted her study of the cat, the sharp sound making Sabriel jump nervously, the hair on the back of her neck frizzing to attention.
"It's only one of the servants," Mogget said in a patronizing tone. "Charter sendings, and pretty low-grade ones at that. They always burn the milk."
Sabriel ignored him and said, "Come in." Her voice shook, and she realized that shaky nerves and weakness would be with her for a while. The door swung open silently, and a short-robed figure drifted in. It was similar to the upper gate warden, being cowled, and so without a visible face. But this one's habit was of light cream rather than black. It had a simple cotton underdress draped over one arm, a thick towel over the other, and its charter-woven hands held a long woolen surcoat and a pair of slippers. Without a word, it went to the end of the bed and put the garments on Sabriel's feet. Then it crossed to a porcelain basin that sat in a silver filigree stand above a tiled area of the floor to the left of the fire. There, it twisted a bronze wheel, and steaming hot water splashed and gurgled from a pipe in the wall, bringing with it the stench of something sulphurous and unpleasant. Sabriel wrinkled her nose.
"Hot springs," commented Mogget. "You won't smell it after a while. Your father always said that having permanent hot water was worth bearing the smell. Or was it your grandfather who said that? Or great-great-aunt? Memory."
The servant stood immobile while the basin filled, then twisted the wheel to cut the flow as water slopped over the rim to the floor, close to Mogget, who leapt to his feet and padded away, keeping a cautious distance from the charter sending. Just like a real cat, Sabriel thought. Perhaps the imposed shape impressed behavior, too, over the years, or centuries. She liked cats. The school had a cat, a plump marmalade feline who went by the name of Biscuits. Sabriel thought about the way it slept on the windowsill of the prefect's room, and then found herself thinking about the school in general, and what her friends would be doing. Her eyelids drooped as she imagined an etiquette class, and the mistress droning on about silver salvers. A sharp clang woke her with yet another start, sending further stabs of pain through tired muscles. The charter sending had tapped the bronze wheel with the poker from the fireplace. It was obviously impatient for Sabriel to have her wash.
"Water's getting cold," explained Mogget, leaping up to the bed again. "And they'll be serving dinner in half an hour."
"They?" asked Sabriel, sitting up and reaching forward to grab slippers and towel, preparatory to sidling out of bed and into them.
"Them,"
said Mogget, butting his head in the direction of the sending, who had stepped back from the basin and was now holding out a bar of soap. Sabriel shuffled over to the basin, the towel wrapped firmly around her, and gingerly touched the water. It was delightfully hot, but before she could do anything with it, the sending stepped forward, whisked the towel off her, and upended the whole basin over her head. Sabriel shrieked, but again, before she could do anything else, the sending had put back the basin, turned the wheel for more hot water, and was soaping her down, paying particular attention to her head, as if it wanted to get soap in Sabriel's eyes, or suspected an infestation of nits.
"What are you doing?"
Sabriel protested, as the strangely cool hands of the sending scrubbed at her back, and then, quite without interest, at her breasts and stomach.
"Stop it! I'm quite old enough to wash myself, thank you."
But Miss Prionti's techniques for dealing with domestic servants didn't seem to work on domestic sendings. It kept scrubbing, occasionally tipping hot water over Sabriel.
"How do I stop it?"
she spluttered to Mogget, as still more water cascaded over her head, and the sending started to scrub lower regions.
"You can't,"
replied Mogget, who seemed quite amused by the spectacle.
"This one's particularly recalcitrant." "What do you... Ow! Stop that! What do you mean, this one?" "There's lots about the place," said Mogget. "Every abhorson seems to have made their own, probably because they get like this one after a few hundred years, privileged family retainers who always think they know best, practically human, in the worst possible way."
The sending paused in its scrubbing just long enough to flick some water at Mogget, who jumped the wrong way and yowled as it hit him. Just before another great basin load of water hit Sabriel, she saw the cat shoot under the bed, his tail dividing the bedspread.
"That's enough, thank you," she pronounced, as the last drench of water drained out through a grill in the tiled area.
The sending had probably finished anyway, thought Sabriel, as it stopped washing and started to towel her dry. She snatched the towel back from it and tried to finish the job herself, but the sending counterattacked by combing her hair, causing another minor tussle. Eventually, between the two of them, Sabriel shrugged on the underdress and surcoat, and submitted to a manicure and vigorous hairbrushing. She was admiring the tiny repeated silver key motif on the black surcoat in the mirror that backed one of the window shutters, when a gong sounded somewhere else in the house, and the servant sending opened the door. A split second later, Mogget raced through, with a cry that Sabriel thought was,
"Dinner!"
She followed, rather more sedately, the sending closing the door behind her. Dinner was in the main hall of the house, a long, stately room that took up half the ground floor. It was dominated by the floor-to-ceiling stained-glass window at the western end. The window showed a scene from the building of the wall, and, like many other things around the house, was heavily laden with charter magic. Perhaps there was no real glass in it at all, Sabriel mused, as she watched the light of the evening sun play in and around the toiling figures that were building the wall. As with the sendings, if you looked closely enough, you could see tiny charter marks making up the patterns. It was hard to see through the window, but judging from the sun, it was almost dusk. Sabriel realized she must have slept for a full day, or possibly even two. A table nearly as long as the hall stretched away from her. A brightly polished table of some light and lustrous timber, heavily laden with silver salt cellars, candelabra, and rather fantastic-looking decanters and covered dishes. But only two places were fully set, with a plethora of knives, forks, spoons, and other instruments, which Sabriel only recognized from obscure drawings in her etiquette textbook. She'd never seen a real golden straw for sucking the innards out of a pomegranate before, for example. One place was before a high-backed chair at the head of the table, and the other was to the left of this, in front of a cushioned stool. Sabriel wondered which was hers, till Mogget jumped up on the stool and said,
"Come on, they won't serve till you're seated."
They were more sendings. Half a dozen in all, including the cream-dressed tyrant of the bedroom. They were all basically the same, human in shape, but cowled or veiled. Only their hands were visible, and these were almost transparent, as if charter marks had been lightly etched on prosthetic hands carved from moonstone. The sendings stood grouped around a door, the kitchen door, for Sabriel saw fires beyond them and smelled the tang of cooking and stared at her. It was rather unnerving not to meet any eyes.
"Yes, that's her," Mogget said caustically. "Your new mistress. Now, let's have dinner."
None of the sendings moved till Sabriel stepped forward. They stepped forward too, and all dropped to one knee, or whatever supported them, beneath the floor-length robes. Each held out their pale right hand, charter marks running bright trails around their palms and fingers. Sabriel stared for a moment, but it was clear they offered their services or loyalty, and expected her to do something in return. She walked to them and gently pressed each upthrust hand in turn, feeling the charter spells that made them whole. Mogget had spoken truly, for some of the spells were old, far older than Sabriel guessed.
"I thank you," she said slowly, "on behalf of my father, and for the kindness you have shown me."
This seemed to be appropriate, or enough to be going on with. The sendings stood, bowed, and went about their business. The one in the cream habit pulled out Sabriel's chair and placed her napkin as she sat. It was of crisp black linen, dusted with tiny silver keys, a miracle of needlework. Mogget, Sabriel noticed, had a plain white napkin, with evidence of old stains.
"I've had to eat in the kitchen for the last 2 weeks," Mogget said sourly,
as two sendings approached from the kitchen, bearing plates that signalled their arrival with a tantalizing odour of spices and hot food.
"I expect it was good for you,"
Sabriel replied brightly, taking a mouthful of wine. It was a fruity, dry, white wine, though Sabriel hadn't developed a palate to know whether it was good or merely indifferent. It was certainly drinkable. Her first major experiments with alcohol lay several years behind her, enshrined in memory as significant occasions shared with two of her closest friends. None of the three could ever drink brandy again, but Sabriel had started to enjoy wine with her meals.
"Anyway, how did you know I was coming?" Sabriel asked. "I didn't know myself till father sent his message."
The cat didn't answer at once. His attention focused on the plate of fish the sending had just put down. Small, almost circular fish, with the bright eyes and shiny scales of the freshly caught. Sabriel had them too, but hers were grilled with a tomato, garlic, and basil sauce.
"I have served 10 times as many of your forebears as you have years,"
Mogget replied at last.
"And though my powers wane with the ebb of time, I always know when one abhorson falls and another takes their place."
Sabriel swallowed her last mouthful, all taste gone, and put down her fork. She took a mouthful of wine to clear her throat, but it seemed to have become vinegar, making her cough.
"What do you mean by fall? What do you know?
What has happened to father?
Margot looked up at Sabriel, eyes half-lidded, meeting her gaze steadily, as no normal cat could.
He is dead, Sabriel. Even if he hasn't passed the final gate, he will walk in life no more. That is,
no, interrupted Sabriel. He can't be. He cannot be. He is a necromancer. He can't be dead.
That is why he sent the sword and bells to you, as his aunt sent them to him in her time,
Mogget continued, ignoring Sabriel's outburst.
And he was not a necromancer. He was Abhorsen.
I don't understand, Sabriel whispered. She couldn't face Mogget's eyes any more.
I don't know. I don't know enough. About anything. The Old Kingdom, charter magic, even my own father.
Why do you say his name as if it were a title? It is. He was the Abhorsen. Now you are.
Sabriel digested this in silence, staring at the swirls of fish and sauce on her plate, silver scales and red tomato blurring into a pattern of swords and fire. The table blurred, too, and the room beyond, and she felt herself reaching for the border with death. But try as she might, she couldn't cross it. She sensed it, but there was nowhere to cross in either direction. Abhorsen's house was too well protected. But she did feel something at the border. Inimical things lurked there, waiting for her to cross. But there was also the faintest thread of something familiar, like the scent of a woman's perfume after she has left the room, or the waft of a particular pipe tobacco around a corner. Sabriel focused on it, and threw herself once more at the barrier that separated her from death. Only to ricochet back to life, as sharp claws pricked her arm. Her eyes snapped open, blinking off flakes of frost, to see Mogget, fur bristling, one paw ready to strike again.
Fool! He hissed. You are the only one who can break the wards of this house, and they wait for you to do so!
Sabriel stared at the angry cat, unseeing, biting back a sharp and proud retort, as she realized the truth in Mogget's words. There were dead spirits waiting, and probably the mordicant would cross as well, and she would have faced them alone and weaponless.
I'm sorry,
she muttered, bowing her head into two frosted hands. She hadn't felt this stupidly awful since she'd burned one of the headmistress's rose bushes with an uncontrolled charter spell, narrowly missing the school's ancient and much-loved gardener. She had cried then, but she was older now and could keep the tears at bay.
Father is not yet truly dead, she said after a moment. I felt his presence. Though he is trapped beyond many gates, I could bring him back.
You must not, said Mogget firmly,
and his voice now seemed to carry all the weight of centuries.
You are Abhorsen, and must put the dead to rest. Your path is chosen.
I can walk a different path, Sabriel replied firmly, raising her head.
Mogget seemed about to protest again, then he laughed, a sardonic laugh, and jumped back to his stool.
Do as you will, he said. Why should I gainsay you? I'm a slave, bound to service. Why would I weep if Abhorsen falls to evil? It is your father who would curse you, and your mother too, and the dead who will be merry.
I don't think he's dead, Sabriel said,
bright blushes of withheld emotion in her pallid cheeks, frost melting, trickling down around her face.
His spirit felt alive. He is trapped in death, I think, but his body lives. Would I still be reviled if I brought him back then?
No,
said Mogget, calm again.
But he has sent the sword and bells. You are only wishing that he lives.
I feel it, Sabriel said simply. And I must find out if my feeling is true.
Perhaps it is so. No strange.
Mogget seemed to be musing to himself, his voice a soft half-purr.
I have grown dull. This collar strangles me. chokes my wits. Help me, Mogget, Sabriel suddenly pleaded, reaching over to touch her hand to